South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started.
Well, I've got a couple of interesting things on the agenda today. And first, I'd like to say that you'll find that first-time visitors down here to Latin America, when they're off the tourist trail especially, they'll often comment to me about a lot of things, but many times they'll say, Johnny, I can't help but notice that a lot of the poor people around here carry around bundles of wood on their back like pack mules. What are they doing with all that wood? Are they cooking with it or selling it or what? And just to show you how insensitive or ill-informed young, spoiled, whiny gringo kids on vacation can be, ones who are down here with their parents against their will and hate every minute of it. I mean, let's face it, they are a million miles away from their Facebook and text message buddies in Cleveland, right? Oh, the pain. Anyway, get this. Once a whiny visiting grade school gringo kid said to me, in all seriousness, he said, I want to go to that party. Someone's roasting an awful lot of marshmallows tonight. And then I told this kid the hard facts of life down here. I told him that about 30 to 40% of the people are so poor that they cook with wood. In fact, about 30 to 40% of the people in the world cook with wood. And you know, it's a fact that a lot of visitors down here to Latin America are ecotypes, you know, tree-hugging gringos, totally into recycling up north and maybe going to farmers' markets and Whole Foods. And by the way, Whole Foods hasn't landed down here yet, which is a good thing because they'd certainly get their asses kicked by the local producers, but who knows, since people down here love everything gringo, you know? And certainly only about 2% of Latin people could ever afford Whole Food prices, that's for sure. Anyway, in talking about eco-active types and preserving the planet and all that, well, you know, Latin America, with all its natural beauty and volcanoes and rivers and jungles and rainforests and such, certainly draws a lot of eco-friendly types, which is a good thing, because they're gonna take care of the environment when they get down here. However, the bad news is that about 99% of these dyed-in-the-wool, save-the-planet eco-tourist types are not scientists. I mean, they got the right idea, but to me, they obviously have not done the necessary math to justify their own eco-political stance. Or maybe they just take Al Gore's word for everything. But it's time I rock your boat a bit on a particularly tough eco issue, namely coal and fossil fuel power plants, which I do think are dirty, stinky, and disgusting, but eliminating every single one of those plants will do almost nothing to reduce CO2 and so-called greenhouse gases, considering there's another CO2 belching problem that's infinitely worse but no one seems to be talking about. The media totally ignores it. But I'll bring it up. Why not? It's part of living in Latin America. And just as a slightly related aside here, since all of society is addicted to fossil fuel and nuclear power and nobody seems to be doing dick about it, there's a lot of talk but no action. I actually have a world-changing philanthropic idea for all you mega-billionaire young internet gurus out there who want to change the world for the better. Forever, with all that extra cash you've got floating around, I mean, there's a lot of billionaire young Zuckerberg types out there who will eventually start some huge philanthropic foundation like Idiot Gates or Soros. And I'm not talking a few hundred piddly million dollars. We're talking billions dumped into a foundation at one crack, like the Idiot Gates and Soros Foundation. Why not use it to solve the world's biggest problem? Energy. Now, you might think there's a lot bigger problems, but you solve the energy problem and everything else will follow. If suddenly we all had free or nearly free energy, well, you guys are smart. I wouldn't have to tell you how that would change the world as we know it. In a few years, you wouldn't recognize it. Too bad idiots like Soros and Bill Gates, who dumped their billions into useless, idiotic vaccination programs, either didn't look at the big picture at all, or had some nefarious twisted motives in mind, or simply preferred the status quo. I mean, if I was Bill Gates and had my own foundation and was worth billions of dollars, I'd be seriously funding people who claim they have conquered the zero-point energy problem. I'm telling you, you put a few billion dollars behind some of these alternative energy guys, and I'm not talking windmills here, come on. I'm talking Tesla-style zero-point energy and thin-film solar cells that come in a roll that you could just stick on your car or a wall or the roof of your house like so much contact paper. And of course, with a few billion bucks at your disposal, you could fund those hundreds of brilliant garage and basement tinkerers who come up with great ideas but never get noticed because they haven't got a pot to pee in. What we need is breakthroughs in totally new technologies that are being worked on right now but are horribly underfunded. So if I was running the Bill Gates Foundation, first thing I'd do would be to pump him and George Soros and all their immediate family members with a triple dose of every vaccination known to man. Then I'd fit Gates with a straitjacket because he would go crazy. Then I'd probably put him in a rubber room with an iPhone and see who he calls. Then I'd take a few billion dollars and start funding all sorts of free energy ideas with the intensity and secrecy of the Manhattan Project. Then I'd borrow Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man suit so I could be ready when the U.S. government and the oil companies put out that contract on me. So say I'm nuts or call me a dreamer. It doesn't matter. When you're down here in Latin America, you got a lot of time on your hands to fantasize like that. Anyway, I was talking about tree huggers and coal-fired plants and ecotourism and the fact that every day of the week about 3 billion people worldwide cook their food and heat their homes with firewood. And that's why you see so many poor people carrying loads of sticks on their backs, day in and day out, especially in the boonies. Now, I've done some simple calculations here that I've never seen anywhere else before. Well, here goes, so follow me on this. The fact is, there are 50,000 coal or fossil fuel-burning electric plants in the world. 50,000. About half of those are coal, and the rest are diesel and natural gas. That's according to the International Energy Agency, and also according to that agency, those 50,000 coal, diesel, and gas power plants put out about 10 billion tons of CO2 a year. 10 billion tons. Which causes all us eco-friendly guys, environmental types, and tree huggers to scream, let's shut them down and our CO2 problems will be over, right? No more global warming. Well, what no one ever talks about is this. Back to what I originally said about all these poor little people carrying stacks of wood on their backs like pack mules all throughout Latin America and, in fact, all throughout the whole third world. All right, you say, so what? Well, I'll tell you this. Next time you're at a party and you're in a big, heavy environmental conversation, here's some brand new ammo for you that'll confuse the situation even more. Did you know that for people who do burn wood in Latin America, the average family of four burns about 15 to 20 pounds of wood a day? And how do I know that? You can't look it up on the internet. I tried. Data like that is just not there. So how did I come up with that number? Well, that's because I asked my gardener slash maintenance guy. His family of four happens to be one of those that uses wood for fuel. So anyway, let's do the math now. Let's be conservative and use 16 pounds of wood per day per family. Times 365 days in a year and you get about 6,000 pounds, which is 3 tons of wood used per family of four per year. So, here are the numbers. You've got about a billion poor households throughout the world, each of them on the average housing four people, burning 3 tons worth of wood a year. Now, this is going to sound crazy to any one of you who hasn't taken an organic chemistry course, but for every ton of firewood that you burn, you produce a ton and a half, or even a little more, of carbon dioxide, CO2, that controversial greenhouse gas, which goes directly into the atmosphere, right? And I'm not going to go into the reason why the math seems weird. You know, you burn a ton and you get a ton and a half of CO2 out of it. Doesn't make sense, does it? Well, it's real chemistry, so take my word for it or look it up. So now you multiply 3 tons of firewood burned per year per family times 1.5, the amount of CO2 that comes from burning every ton of firewood, and you get about 4.5 tons of CO2 put into the atmosphere by each family who burns firewood, which works out to about 4.5 billion tons of CO2 in the atmosphere a year from burning firewood. And that's slightly less than half of all the CO2 put into the atmosphere by fossil fuel power plants. They put out 10 billion tons of CO2 a year, remember? But 4.5 billion tons of CO2 produced just by regular folks burning firewood in the third world, slightly less than half of what the power plants put out, well, that's a huge problem too now, isn't it? Nothing to sneeze at, is it? Ah, but wait a minute, we've missed something here. But we're only talking about people in the third world who burn firewood for cooking food and heating water. What about people who burn firewood who don't live in nice tropical or semi-tropical environments? They not only cook food with their firewood, but they heat their homes with it too. And very, very inefficiently, I might add, since they don't have money, resources, or access to modern, high-efficiency wood-burning stoves that cost a bundle. Not to mention, they never insulate their homes because they're mostly uneducated, thus unaware of how to do it properly, and they wouldn't have the money for it anyway. You can take my word for it on this, too, or you can look it up. There are nearly a half a billion households on the planet that burn firewood for heat, and that nasty practice emits an additional 10 billion tons of CO2 a year, the same amount of CO2 emitted as the fossil fuel power plants. But even that's not the whole story. It gets worse, much worse. The monkey wrench in the whole works is the fact that each year, throughout the First and Third World, man-made fires, controlled and uncontrolled, put out an additional 30 billion tons of CO2 a year, three times what fossil fuel power plants put out per year. And by controlled, I mean the ones that you see burning all the time down here in the Third World on a regular basis. For example, farmers burning out old crops after they've been harvested before they plant the next season's crop. That's a very common practice here. Just take a ride in the boonies just a few weeks after the dry season ends and you'll see what I mean. Now, it's been estimated by scientists and foresters down here that controlled burning and such throughout the Third World accounts for about 40 billion, with a B, tons of CO2 added to the atmosphere every year, which probably doesn't mean much to you, but let's add all those CO2 emissions up. Now, you've got about 14.5 billion tons emitted by people cooking and heating their homes with firewood. And you've got an estimated 40 billion tons of CO2 being emitted by controlled burning and other fires set by man, whether intentional, by accident, or by mischief, for a total of 54.5 billion tons of CO2 emitted by man burning wood, brush, or other plant material. And that's just considering the Third World, not including First World forest and brush fires. So again, that works out to 54.5 billion tons of CO2 emitted versus the 10 billion tons of CO2 emitted by coal, diesel, and gas-fired power plants throughout the world. So now I want to ask all you eco-diehards out there who you really want to go after. Looks like, pun intended, you're barking up the wrong tree. Who do you want to go after, the coal or the fossil fuel industry? Well, if you do, you're going after a very small fish. Since the really big fish out there, the big offenders, are burning wood and plant material, putting out CO2 to the tune of more than five times what the power plants are putting out. And you have to know by now, it's impossible to stop these poor folks from burning firewood. That's their way of life. And that's not going to change in my lifetime or yours. And though the supply of wood might be exhausted somewhere down the line, they'll find something, paper, brush, maybe even plastic containers and bottles. They're just not going to stop burning things for heat. So then, what's the answer? Well, you tell me. I mean, there are very good answers if you have the money, but it's certainly not more coal-fired power plants or nuclear. We know that's a dangerous dead end. But don't kid yourself. If you're really worried about global warming and you think it's man-made, well, based on these recent statistics, you might just want to find a better, more logical bandwagon to jump on. And you know, people do ask me where I stand on the global warming thing. And yes, I believe it's happening, and I believe man is contributing, but not a whole hell of a lot. I think we're in a warming cycle. I think the whole solar system is in a warming cycle right now, and cosmologists have proven that. It's a fact, and you can look that up too. So even if our polluted little planet wasn't inhabited by careless little men with brutish governments, it would still be warming up as a natural cyclic process. Not natural to us, of course, but natural to the ebb and flow of the solar system. And how fast? Who knows? And by the way, I said the whole solar system is warming up, every planet. And note, I didn't say cosmetologists have proven it. That's something that Bush Jr. would have said. I said cosmologists have proven it. At least I think I said that. Anyway, I'm all for saving the planet, and I have a very small carbon footprint myself. Now, you might be shaking your head when I say that, but I'll bet mine's smaller than yours. Now, when's the last time you heard a guy brag about that? But my personal opinion is the only way to get poor third world people to quit burning wood is education and birth control. And there is some progress in the area of education, but as for birth control, Speaking just for Latin societies now, you've got two big problems. One is it's a macho society, so for a man, the more kids and girlfriends and affairs, the more manly a guy is. And number two, Latin America is about 90% Catholic and 8% evangelical Christian. So birth control, forget about it. The Pope says, niet, you're going to hell. Now I'd like to get to a very interesting email. I've said in past shows that there are very good reasons why I don't talk too much about sex and dating and mating, simply because if I do answer all the emails that come in on those subjects, I wouldn't have time to talk about anything else. And that's why, by the way, if you go to my website, expatwisdom.com, you'll find a new blogger called ExpatX, who talks a great deal about those very subjects. In fact, that's all he talks about. So anyway, just check him out. That's ExpatX at expatwisdom.com. But for now, I'd like to read this rather interesting email, which has to do with that subject in a roundabout way, too. So here goes. This is from Anthony. He says, "Dear Johnny, before I say the show is great, which it is, I have two difficulties with the way you present potential with Latin women." He says, "A few of your podcasts seem hostile to marriage, extended families, and children. Your buddy Expat Eddie is dating what I would assume is a woman several years younger than him. If most Latinas of childbearing age want to have children, what are middle-aged white males with vasectomies doing wasting these women's time? Shouldn't they be pursuing upper-class Latinas with higher education that, like other educated Western women, pursue career, delay marriage, and childbirth? One thing I've noticed for decades is that the majority of white men are reluctant to learn how to dance. Instead, they rely mostly on personality and earning power of being a white male to get through life's social challenges. So in a moment of self-depreciation, two white men with left feet from the Rust Belt, you keep mentioning Cleveland, continually moan about attending quinceañeras, which, by the way, is a 15-year-old girl's coming-out party in Latin America. It's a huge family event, and girls from all classes have them. Anyway, he says, "You continually moan about attending quinceañeras because the DJ is playing music you don't like." And, of course, he's referring to Expat Eddie and yours truly as the two middle-aged guys who can't dance. You picked up on that, right? Anyway, he says, "Maybe that's why when I see white gringos in family photos with Latino families, you white guys look out of place. In fact, you are out of place. It's too bad you see a majority of 40, 50, and 60-year-old Midwestern men going down to South America looking for business opportunities and love. They end up with visa hunters because of their lack of success in America, which makes them vulnerable to the aggressive tactics of mildly attractive women." And then he says, "I see these types of men in Tijuana all the time. I sometimes have to keep from giggling." And then Anthony finishes off by saying, "I enjoy the podcast. It's very informative. I'm considering moving to South America as well. I'm not interested in starting a business, just looking for a relaxed, comfortable life at a reduced cost, including an attractive younger wife and children. I'm 42, black, past four, mid to late 30s, and in excellent shape. No left feet here. I dance very well, plus I've been a DJ since 1986. Okay, that was Tony's first email to me, and I'm going to read another one that he sent me just recently, right after I comment on this one. Now, obviously, you picked up on the fact that he's slamming the lifestyle of Expat Eddie and I, which, of course, I'll respond to in a second. But first, I'd like to say, for all of you that may be wondering how much hate mail I get mixed in with my regular emails, well, in my 255 shows I've done on PRN, and with all the thousands of emails I've gotten in the last 2.5 years, believe it or not, I've only received 3 real pieces of hate mail. And the funny thing is, even though they hate me, they keep listening. Must be my soothing rants, huh? And if I have the time today, I'm going to read you one of those pieces of hate mail. Or I'll read it on the next show, I promise. So anyway, let's talk about Anthony's email. And yes, some of my podcasts might seem hostile to marriage and extended families and children. Well, let's look at the two types of expat, gringos and gringas, that come down here to live permanently. The first are couples that come down here, they're already married, and only very infrequently do they bring along a kid or two. Most of these couples are over 40, and they've had their family already up in Cleveland or Detroit, their kids are grown, and those kids don't have the same ideas as their parents. They're young adults now, and they've got their own life up in the States. And they're not buying into leaving the good old USA like their parents because they're young and they don't know any better. They were a generation born into the Big Brother culture, and they haven't figured out that their government's given it to them up the ass. But their parents know better. They were born in a generation before Big Brother took hold. And that's why they escaped to Latin America. So, obviously, couples coming down here to Latin America are not looking for love and romance with the locals. And they're not looking to have more kids. They've been there already. And many of them are still sending regular checks back up north to their immature adult progeny to prove it. So, just what percentage of expats are married or hooked up as a couple when they come down? I'd say these days about a quarter of all new expats, based on what I see down here and the attendance at my expat wisdom seminars. So let's talk about the rest of the people who come down, the single people. Now, Anthony asks in his email, if most Latin women are looking to have children and families, and white middle-aged males are coming down with vasectomies looking for love and marriage, then why are these guys wasting these women's time? Shouldn't these older gringo guys be pursuing upper-class Latinas with higher educations? Career women who delay marriage and have children later in life. Wouldn't that be a better fit? To which I respond, vast numbers of middle-class Latin women do have college degrees. It's not just the girls from the wealthy upper classes. But they're stuck on a middle-class Latin-style treadmill, which means only about $300 to $500 a month, even for a college-educated woman. So by all means, pursue educated Latinas like that. But let me warn you, like I have in past shows, upper-class educated Latinas are not career women. That's not in the plan. Sure, they get their university degrees, but their parents are rich. These ladies are very entitled and generally have bodyguards, cleaning ladies, and pretty much out of touch with the real world. And sure, they too would love to hook up with a gringo because every Latin woman from the low to the highest classes wants blue-eyed Justin Bieber-looking kids, only a bit taller. And as unpolitically correct as this sounds, and who cares, gringos and Europeans are the only avenue these ladies have to win that kind of genetic lottery. Otherwise, you see, these upper-class entitled Latin ladies will marry upper-class entitled Latin guys. Then they have no chance at little Brad Pitt or Justin Bieber kids. And remember, these upper-class, rich Latin women with educations will never marry out of their class. And being a gringo, you are in their class. However, if you plan on marrying into that family, you better have the money to support her as she's accustomed to. Or else you'll forever be a slave to her daddy's money and thus his whims. And about that vasectomy business, you know, a great percentage of men over 40 who've had families already up in the States and have been through divorces and stuff, they've had a vasectomy. They didn't decide to get snipped to come down to Latin America and play the rock star. They had it done back in Cleveland when things up there got out of hand. In regards to that, I always recommend you're 100% honest with a Latina. If the relationship starts getting serious, do tell her you've been snipped, if that's the case, and that you never ever plan on living back in the States. Because, you know, that's a very good way to figure out if she loves you more than she loves the idea of a green card and little Justin Bieber kids. And another thing, a lot of middle-aged white guys that come down here with two left feet, they're not, I repeat, not coming down here thinking that they're Romeos. Far from it, believe me. A good many of them, in fact, I think most of them, are smarting from bad relationships up north and don't come down expecting much in the love and romance department. I've heard that story 100 times. 40, 50, or even 60-ish gringo comes down looking to just retire or start a business, and he ends up hooking up with a beautiful, smart Latina, and he really believes for once in his life he's actually won the love lottery. And I hear the same thing from gringa expats who hook up with Latin guys down here. It's funny. So many nerdy and even very timid expats tell me the same thing. That somehow, by some grand twist of fate, they absolutely got a second chance at a great love life. Something they never expected. Most of these happy ending good luck stories happen when you're off the tourist trail. Stupid gringos who go down to Costa Rica, Panama, Cancun, Rio de Janeiro, or the tourist districts in Colombia or Argentina, well, there, right away, ladies are going to spot you as a gringo and a possible green card. But when you're off the tourist trail, I hate to repeat this, but you're a rarity. You're like a guy with a British accent in Cleveland. You are a B-grade rock star. However, once you're in Costa Rica or Tijuana, you're just another clueless gringo with too much money and always a possible green card. And Anthony reports in his email that he sees that all the time with gringos in Tijuana, one of the most gringo-contaminated Latin cities on earth. Bottom line, any gringo or gringa stupid enough to hook up with a local in a tourist town deserves what they get. So my question is, Anthony, what are you doing hanging around in a Mexican border town? Mexico is a perfect place for a green gringo to get scammed. And I'm not saying you won't find some perfectly fine people there. But generally, you've got some slim chances going for you. Mexico's just been ruined by back-and-forth illegal immigration and deportations and the severe contamination of the gringo dollar. And if you spend enough time there, you'll know exactly what I mean. So anyway, Anthony sent me another email after that saying, by the way, Johnny, I recommend anybody caught having grungy-looking U.S. dollars just go right back to the airport. I had a couple of 20s that they just wouldn't take. Well, Tony, I guess you haven't been listening because I've mentioned that many times on my show. And finally, in his most recent email, he throws me another insult. But I have a thick skin, so I'll share it with you guys. He says, Johnny, do you have anything written or another contributor to the website that isn't nearly geriatric sounding as some of your rants sound like? I get along well with those under 30 and those around 50, but I don't get along with people 60 or older. We don't hang in the same circles. Frankly, they as a group are responsible for the financial crisis and political vacuum we are currently in. Well, first of all, Anthony, I'm not 60 yet. Sorry. Do I sound 60? Where's that cyanide pill? And my response to your crack that the over 60 baby boomer crowd created the mess we're in, well, I really do agree with that, except you put those guys in office, not me, because I have not voted since I was 18 when I first gave it a try and gave it up. And I'll bet you voted for our savior and Nobel laureate Obama. Just a guess. And people say if you don't vote, you can't complain. But what I say is, if you vote, you can't complain, because you're the one directly responsible for voting in the assholes in the first place. And me, by not voting, don't endorse that corrupt system. Anyway, as far as Anthony asking if there isn't someone else on the website that isn't nearly as geriatric sounding as me and my rants, all I gotta say is, Anthony, aren't we being a bit schizophrenic here? On the one hand, you're telling me you love the show. It's great. In the next breath, you're calling me a middle-aged geriatric dude with dancing issues who came down here specifically to take advantage of uneducated Latin women who are really just looking for blue-eyed Justin Bieber babies and a green card. Then, in the next breath, you say, I enjoy the podcast. It's very informative. I'm considering moving to South America myself. I'm looking for a relaxed, comfortable life at a reduced cost, including an attractive younger wife and children. Well, all I can say in my defense is, I guess with my incipient Alzheimer's, I'm only as good as my last geriatric rant.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture.